From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with it? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
It's Allie Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Allie Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Allie Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner by Annette Bird closing the late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, the final Equine Forum show of 2019 is upon us on this 28th day of December, which means we are just 4 days away from all thoroughbreds turning 1 year older, and the sport's newly turned three-year-olds will begin their journey toward the first Saturday in May, which, in case you're wondering, let's get this out of the way right off the bat. Now, just 126 days, 9 hours, 48 minutes, and 27 seconds away from that Run for the Roses at Churchill Downs, May 2nd, 2020. We'll be there as your exclusive radio home here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Good morning, everybody. Happy to have you with me. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, welcoming you to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, this show presented by Red Brand Fence. And I thought that with this being the final program of 2019, that it would be apropos to spend some time looking back on the top moments and the top races of this past year. And I'm going to have help doing that here this morning from a few members of our HRN team, namely Kurt Becker, longtime analyst here on the network, part of many of our big broadcasts that we do. He's also the announcer at Keeneland. Kurt's going to join me at 8:35 Eastern time to look back on this year's Kentucky Derby and this year's Preakness Stakes. No doubt many people will remember this year for what happened beneath the Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May. And I'll talk to Kurt about that coming up 8:35 Eastern. 9 o'clock Eastern time, I'll be joined by the Big A, Anthony Stabile. You can catch him every weekday on our Red Brand radio shows and many other programs here throughout the year. Big A will join me from New York to talk about the Belmont Stakes, and I think that makes sense here this morning because of the fact that the Belmont winner, Sir Winston, is back in action later today, and that ties in to our industry star of the week, which you'll hear later in the first half of the program as well. Not only will Big A talk about the Belmont, he'll also spend time talking about some of his top moments as he covered racing for us all summer long at Saratoga. So we'll talk to Big A about that coming up 9 o'clock. Bobby Newman, part of our broadcast team at the Breeders' Cup this year, is going to join me at 9:20 Eastern time, and he'll look back on some of the moments that stood out to him from this year's Breeders' Cup. And let me tell you, a lot of different ways that you can go with that one. Pretty special couple of days of racing, and we'll talk to Bobby about that 9:20 Eastern time. In addition, I thought it would be kind of cool to focus on the breeding side of things as well. And the horse that is going to end up being the leading freshman sire, the horse whose runners made it to the racetrack, if you don't know what that is, made it to the racetrack for the first time here in 2019. His babies made it to the racetrack. That's American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner. He's going to take home yet another title. And he stands at Coolmore, their Ashford stud division in Versailles, Kentucky. I'm going to be joined by Blaze Benjamin coming up in just about 8 or 10 minutes from right now. He's going to join me for our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence. And he will talk about American Pharoah. He'll talk about the other Triple Crown winner they have standing there too. That's Justify. He'll talk about Competitive Edge and a couple other stallions out there at Ashford Stud. They are loaded. And I'll get a chance to talk to Blaze about that coming up here in just a little bit. But I think when you stop and look at what's happened here in 2019, this is a year that will not soon be forgotten. And I think several years from now, you may very well be pointing to this year as the year our sport changed. Changed in a big way. Some will say change for the better. Some will take the opposite approach and say, wait a minute, this sport was better years ago. But it's going to change. It's changing right now. So many things brought to light through the occurrences that took place at Santa Anita throughout much of the season. The issues with the catastrophic injuries that were being suffered by horses in morning training, horses that were racing in the afternoons. It's a year in which, when those things happened, we saw extremist animal welfare organizations, who have always come after horse racing, given a seat at the table in the discussions about what our sport can do better. That's an historic moment in itself. Things are going to change. Things are already changing. The Stronach Group has made widespread, sweeping changes. The Breeders' Cup, which was held at Santa Anita, made widespread changes to their protocols, their safety initiatives. Mainly for the horses, but for the humans that are aboard those horses too. It's going to change. Change is not always easy, especially in this sport. Some people will say the change is for the better. Some people will say it's for the worse. But I think it's going to end up being somewhere in the middle. It's got to be a give and take. And this 2019 very well could be remembered as the year our sport changed. What happened at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May with that historic disqualification of Maximum Security when Country House was put up for the victory may very well change the world's most famous horse race forever. You don't often see a disqualification in the Kentucky Derby. And I remember after it happened, we had several discussions here on the network, on this program and other shows, and there was a lot of chatter on social media about it. A lot of other racing programs were talking about it. Even national news media outside of racing was talking about it. Was it the right decision? Do you agree with it? Did you not agree with it? And that was a hot button topic on both sides of the fence. You know, I liken it to other sports with officiating. And officiating is always under a microscope, whether it's the NFL or the NBA or college basketball, college football, whatever it is. Officiating is always under a microscope. The stewards, for all intents and purposes, in our sport, are the officials. And they can make game-changing decisions, just as officials can in other sports. People will say, look, you got to let them play. There's 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby. You can't take that horse down. You got to let them play a little bit. There's always some, what do they say, Rubens Racing in NASCAR, right? Well, Rubens Racing and horse racing can get somebody killed. So that's not always a good thing. But there's always some rough play in the Kentucky Derby. You got 20 horses. They're all trying to get to one spot, and they're all trying to get to the finish line first. It's all on the line. So the question becomes, much like it does in the NFL or in a basketball setting, if it's a foul in the first quarter of a game, why is it not a foul, the same play, not a foul in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line? And I say that, I draw that parallel, because a lot of people said, yeah, they made the right decision. They followed the rule book by the letter of the law. Maximum Security interfered with the other horses, caused a chain reaction. It could have been catastrophic. It wasn't, thankfully. But they made the right decision by the letter of the law. They followed the rules. And other people will say, yeah, but you don't call that. You don't make that decision in the Kentucky Derby because it's the Kentucky Derby. Well, if it's a foul in a claiming race, a 12-5 claimer, and that happens, and it's an easy decision, why is it not a foul in the Kentucky Derby? Those were the arguments we heard. That is why the Derby might change forever now. We've seen that they'll make that move. The stewards will make that move. They will disqualify a horse for an incident that they feel warrants disqualification, just like they would any other race. Does this now open the door for more jockeys to lodge an objection, for more inquiries to be posted in the Run for the Roses? You don't often see that. Will it happen more often now that we've set a precedent, the stewards have set a precedent, of taking a horse down? Just another reason I feel you might be looking at 2019, a couple of years up the road, 3, 4, 5 years up the road, as the year our sport changed. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter. I want to know, what is your top moment of 2019 in racing? And I'll try to pass those along as we move throughout the program. You can go to at HRN on our Twitter feed, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. What is your top moment of 2019 in racing? Let me know your thoughts on that. Everybody will have a different opinion. I'm sure the Derby will get a lot of, be a popular answer with that question, but let me know your thoughts on that. The Eclipse Awards are going to be held at Gulfstream Park January 23rd. And yesterday, the announcement came out of the winners of the Media Eclipse Awards, and it is with great humility and great pleasure that I pass along the news that the Horse Racing Radio Network will receive the Eclipse Award in the multimedia internet category for our coverage of the Breeders' Cup this past year. This is our second Eclipse Award. The first one was back in 2010 for coverage of the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, that famous run between Blame and Zenyatta. And here we are receiving our second one coming up on January 23rd. And it's, I think I used the word surreal in the press release, and that's probably a good word to describe it. Because when you set out in the game, well, even going back further than that, when my wife and I first moved to Kentucky from Massachusetts back in 1997, I can't work around horses. I'm not good around horses. I can't ride. I would never fit in on a farm by any stretch of the imagination unless I was working in the office somewhere. So I had to find something. My goal, when people would ask me why I was moving to Kentucky, was I want to do something that will help the sport that I fell in love with. When I created HRN with my late partner, Pete Kulis, after sitting down behind the microphone for the first time in 2003, I said, look, I just want to create something that will be a benefit to the sport. People that can't be in front of a TV, I want to give them the opportunity to listen to a horse race on radio. Didn't know where it would end up. Never imagined we'd be sitting here talking about two Eclipse Awards. You just can't. You can't think about those things. You just want to do something to benefit the sport. And it's been an amazing ride. And I need to thank so many people for that, especially when it comes to the coverage this year. They say it takes a village, and it does. The Breeders' Cup team, Pete Rotundo, Dora Delgado, Jim Gluckson. You talk about outstanding people. We've been a partner with Breeders' Cup since 2007 when the Breeders' Cup was at Monmouth. The people at Santa Anita have always been so, so good. In particular, Darren Rodriguez, who handles all of the technical situations behind the scenes. You won't hear her name very often unless you listen to our program, but she is a Hall of Famer. She is the reason we're able to get on the air most days that we're at Santa Anita. Mike Willman, Nate Newby. Man, are they great supporters. All of our sponsors, in particular, Red Brand Fence and Visit Barbados, who were the title sponsor and have been for several years, the title sponsors of our Breeders' Cup coverage. But all of our sponsors who support us throughout the year. Invaluable. We can't do this without you and without your support, so thank you. The horsemen, who all year long, every time we call them, every time we text them, ask them to come on any of our shows, and we do that a lot. The horsemen who took the time to visit with us for this broadcast and all of our shows, thank you. Safi Joseph Jr., who trained Math Wizard. He was part of a feature we produced for this broadcast. Vinny Viola, who stopped and took the time to visit with Ashley Mayhew in the paddock before the race. And Hall of Famer Mike Smith, who was part of a feature we produced on Zenyatta, looking back on her magical run at Santa Anita. And of course, our entire team. You don't do it without a great team around you, and we had that. Kurt Becker, Dan Mason, Bobby Newman, Ashley Mayhew were all the other talent on the broadcast. My beautiful wife, Michelle, who just does so much for this network and has been there supporting me from day number one. Nothing would have happened without her being there, too. Our producers, Lee Delapina, Sean C., Jude Feld, who wrote the feature pieces that were part of this broadcast, voiced one of them. Megan Devine, who voiced the Zenyatta feature for us, and Justin Taylor, Keith O'Brien, Howie Deneroff, and of course, the Big A, who quite often throughout the year will sit down with folks in New York for us, interview them so that we can use that content on our race broadcast later. All of those people deserve to be recognized as part of this award. And every one of you who tunes into our shows every single week, listeners in 147 countries so far in 2019, thank you for being part of this ride with us. Can't do it without you. Without you, there's no point in having a network. So thank you for being along for the ride. Really, really appreciate you tuning in and participating in our poll questions every week and all the kind things that you had to say to us again this year. Thank you so much. And I also want to congratulate all of the other Media Eclipse Award winners too. TVG, who won in the television category for the Pacific Classic. Fox Sports 2 for their feature on Rachel Alexandra. Congratulations to them and the Naira team for that particular honor. Joe Nevels from the Pollock Report, who won in the feature commentary writing category. Bryce Miller of the San Diego Union Tribune, who won in the news and enterprise writing category. And Jim, I'm going to try and get his name right. Jim Leinenberger, I believe is how you say it. I hope. Jim, if I got it wrong, I apologize, who won in the photography category. Jim works with DRF. All of those very deserving, very hardworking individuals, and congratulations to all of the Media Eclipse Awards winners. All right, I'm going to get to a break and come back with our Stallion Spotlight segment. I'll visit with Blaze Benjamin from Coolmore to talk about this year's leading freshman sire, American Pharoah. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
What do exciting young sires American Pharoah, Constitution, and Race Day have in common? They're North America's leading freshman sires by black type winners in 2019, with four each. What's the biggest difference between them? Stud fee. At $7,500 stands and nurses, Race Day represents one of the best values in Kentucky for 2020.
Another beautiful son of Tappet striding out powerfully through the stretch. Race Day.
Breed to Tappet's value, sire. Breed to Race Day. Standing at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence. This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Competitive Edge makes it 2 for 2 here at the Spa. Competitive Edge, the winner by 4.5 lengths.
He's just perfect, and now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
You're looking at Lucky. You're looking at Lucky in the Preakness. To win it by a half length.
Classic Empire to the 16th, about a length and a half. Not this time, is gradually wearing him down. Classic Empire, not this time. Classic Empire, Classic Empire by a neck.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Yeah, American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner, continues to make his mark and leave a mark on the sport of thoroughbred racing. Going to be the leading freshman sire in 2019. He stands at Coolmore's Ashford Stud in Versailles, Kentucky. And joining me now for our Stallion Spotlight segment, presented by Red Brand Fence, is Blaze Benjamin from Coolmore. Blaze, good morning, my friend.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
Everything is good. Happy New Year. And boy, what a year for American Pharoah, huh?
Yeah, it's been amazing. You know, we'd love to see it. And listen, first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. I mean, it's something else.
What's been the key to his fast start at stud?
His mind, I'd say, Mike. You know, he's passing it on to all his progeny. You know, even in the early stages of when they were at the pre-trainers and then they got to the trainers, the one thing that they all said to us was their minds are amazing. And listen, he's passed it on.
Yeah,
his athleticism. He's a very good mover.
Yeah, he's passed it on in a big way. And I can remember, even when he was going through that Triple Crown run, we spent a lot of time talking with Bob Baffert and even stood there along the rail with him a couple of times watching this horse breeze. And you know, he would always talk about the way he moved and how effortless it was. And I think you're seeing that in a lot of his offspring.
Correct.
What's been the most exciting part for you to be around him each and every day?
Just listening, seeing him. You know, you go around him, and he's the Triple Crown winner. You know, he's American Pharoah.
Does he get a lot of? Is he still getting a lot of fans out to visit him?
Yes. You know, we're close for the holidays, but come January, you know, we'll be open for the open house, and we invite everybody to come and see him.
How do you go about getting, or do you even have to hustle mares for a horse like American Pharoah, or do they just come
no,
to him?
No, not really, Mike, especially with the way that he started. I mean, 11 stakes horses, stakes performing horses, 3 grade 1 performing horses, you know, a Breeders' Cup winner, 4-wheel drive has been amazing. I mean, for Wesley Ward, it's just, no, you don't, a horse like him, you don't have to hustle too hard on.
Yeah, he's pretty special. He's not the only Triple Crown winner that you get the chance to look at every day. You have Justify out there, too. Tell me a little bit about him and what's going on with him.
Justify, yep, he's another one. He didn't need any hustling at all. You know, he was an easy sell, pretty much, to Scat Daddy. It was a big loss losing Scat Daddy there. But having Justify and then winning the Triple Crown, unbeaten, he was, he was a very easy sell. He covered, of the 293 active grade one winning mares, Justify covered 41 of those.
Woo.
So, yeah, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a huge number. And, you know, like you said, you don't have to hustle a lot when you have a Triple Crown winner standing there. At least you wouldn't think you'd have to. They kind of come to him. And when it's not just any mare that's coming to him, though. You talk about the quality and, you know, these greatest stakes-winning mares. That old adage that we hear in thoroughbred racing all the time, right? Breed the best to the best and hope for the best.
Correct.
Yeah, and you're doing that at Coolmore.
Correct.
It's not just Justify, though. You're doing that with all the stallions. That's always kind of been the philosophy, hasn't it?
Exactly. That is our philosophy here at Ashford, you know, the home of champions. But back to Justify here, you know, the mares he bred, Mike, it was unreal. It was probably one of the best book of mares that I think any of us have ever seen around here. You know, there were mares including Found, you know, you had Together Forever, Misty For Me, you know, the Dams of Lady Aurelia, Arrogate, Run Happy. I mean, those mares are, to get those type of mares in the stallion's first book is almost unheard of. So, you know, the sky's the limit with him.
Yeah, now the expectations will also be very high, but they've always been high for this horse, even through his racing career. How do you kind of deal with all of those things as the babies start to make their way toward the sales ring, Benjamin or Blaze? How do you do it?
Repeat that question.
How do you deal with all the high expectations as they move toward the sales ring now?
Well, you know, we always had high expectations going back to Pharaoh. You know, you never count your eggs until they hatch. And thankfully, he's gone on and done what we were hoping he was going to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only hope the same for Justify going forward. But, I mean, Pharaoh, he's kind of set the bar, and we're hoping that you'd imagine they're going to get better from 2 to 3. So for him to do what he's done so far has just been, it's amazing. And we couldn't be happier, you know. Very important for us as a stud farm in standing and trying to find these stallions, but I think it's important for the whole industry, given everything that's going on and whatnot. So for the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years to go out and start with such a bang, I mean, it's amazing for everybody involved.
Visiting with Blaze Benjamin from Coolmore here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is our Stallion Spotlight segment that we bring you every single week, focusing on stallions across the country and American Pharoah, the leading freshman sire of 2019. But behind him are some pretty big names, including another Ashford stallion in the sixth position right now. That is Competitive Edge. And look, I mean, this is a horse that maybe is flying more under the radar, certainly than American Pharoah, but he doesn't have to take a back seat to too many others either, does he, Blaze?
No, he's another horse that we're very happy with. You know, he started very fantastic. He's up to 27 winners. You know, he had another winner yesterday. So they just keep coming.
Tell me about his leading earner. I'm looking at the name here. My Italian Rabbi. Tell me about him.
She is a New York filly. And, yes, he's been a good horse. Very happy with her as well. You know, not sure where they're pointing her now, but she's been fun to watch. And a Competitive Edge again, 4 stakes winners. Very happy with the way he started.
Yeah, you should be. It's all part of that Coolmore Ashford stud philosophy, breed the best of the best, and they're doing that with all of their stallions. Certainly as many as they possibly can, and it's been quite a year for the stallions at Ashford. You can learn more by going to coolmore.com. That will pull up all of the stallions. It gives you detailed information on every stallion standing at Ashford Stud, and highly encourage you to take a look at them. Of course, Uncle Mo is there looking at Lucky, Mendelssohn, Practical Joke, Munnings, Cupid, Foo Peg is still around. Classic Empire, they're there, and they're there in force, and make sure you take a look at them at coolmore.com. Blaze, one last question before I let you go. I understand
Absolutely,
you're Mike. Jamaican, but you talk with that Irish accent. Did the folks at Coolmore make you do that when you get the job?
I think, Mike, just working for them it's been coming up 10 years working for them, so, you know, being around them every day, it kind of is one of those things that just sticks. But the Irish, they're just great people overall. you know, very hard to say anything bad about them.
No, it's a great team, and you're part of that team, and I can't thank you enough for being with us here on the show this morning. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, so we'll get that to you. And Blaze, very happy new year, and thanks for being with me this morning.
Mike, thank you very much. And one more thing, Mike, Royal Act, American Pharoah's son, is running on the 29th American Fish off the year with the bang. He's running for Peter Urton.
Beautiful.
On the 29th at Delmar.
All right, good luck.
Perfect, thank you, bye-bye.
Thanks, Blaze. All right, Blaze Benjamin from Coolmore here on HRRN. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When I come back, I'll be joined by Kurt Becker to look back on this year's Kentucky Derby and Preakness. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This is the story of a thoroughbred who outdid his sire and then some in winning the Belmont Stakes, and in so doing wrapped up racing's Triple Crown in the same year the Boston Red Sox won the American League pennant with the likes of the Splendid Splinter and the Little Professor, Ted Williams and Dominic DiMaggio, for those of you among the uninitiated. Even most wary, hard-bitten skeptics of this particular thoroughbred had to finally admit that there was nothing in sight to give him a tussle after a relatively easy win in the Belmont Stakes to nail down the final leg of the Triple Crown, only the seventh horse in its revered history to have done so. The Belmont run on Saturday, June 1st of that year, removed the last obstacle to his complete domination of his age division. He won the 12-furlong affair with ease under a supremely confident ride by Warren Mertens, and if there were any doubts or shreds of excuse by his opponents, the arguability of them dissipated like an early morning fog in the glowing sun. This was some kind of racehorse indeed. You know, in racing, nothing surprises. The 3-year-old campaign of the horse nicknamed the Clubfoot Comet was indeed poignantly illustrative of that axiom. He had been accorded not the slightest consideration by the supposedly in-the-knowers in regard to his chances in the Derby. But he cantered off to a virtually uncontested 8-length score in an eye-popping performance. 1 week later, he'd overcome some bad racing luck and some questionable handling as well, in coming home a winner in a run for the black-eyed Susans, the Preakness, by a bare neck. The surprising thing was that his performance in the latter event had been so singularly unimpressive to many, he was regarded only moderately at best as a candidate to culminate his campaign by winning the Belmont. Well, all he did was dispel any last vestiges of dubiousness by racing to a victory that, in its own way, was even more decisive than his Derby score. Old-timers and youthful aficionados alike now realized, sit up and take notice time for this horse. If this great thoroughbred had any shortcoming, it was that aesthetically he was nondescript at best. Many often said the best thing about him was the caliber of his competition. That was as blatantly demeaning as tell a young lady she has as much class as a telephone pole. He never looked pretty. He was blue-collar, lunch-pail, punch-the-clock type, who knew what he had to do, and he did it. He wasn't the object of adulation and excitement because of his appearance. No, indeed. That came as a result of his ability to do what he was born to do, run. And run he could. Oh, yes, his competitors were not noteworthy, to be sure, not because they actually were, but rather because he made them look that way by his ability. His sire, Bull Venture, bowed a tendon after the Preakness and could not win the final leg of the Triple Crown, although he was as game as a thoroughbred could be. This horse, with a slight disfigurement in one of his forelegs, had no trouble, other than the aforementioned problems in the Preakness, in nailing down each of racing's jewels of the Triple Crown. His sire, Bull Venture, had won a marvelous Derby in closing from 11th place to whip Brevity, and then had barely outlasted Granville to win the Preakness. Although there may not have been any Brevities or Granvilles to challenge our subject for this piece, there can be absolutely no denying he outdid his illustrious sire, and joined Sir Barton, Gallon Fox, Omaha, War Admiral, Whirlaway, and Count Fleet as members of a very select company, Triple Crown winners. That marvelous thoroughbred who went on to become an outstanding handicap horse was none other than Assault, affectionately named the Clubfoot Comet.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Maximum Security keeps on fighting. War of Will is there, too, as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security, so dead game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security, Country House, 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby. Country House second, followed by Code of Honor third, and in behind them, Master Fencer, who is closing late inside of Tacitus. It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saenz.
Hold on, tickets. There's a rider's objection in this race, and it concerns the top two finishers. There's been a disqualification. Number 7, Maximum Security, disqualified from first for interference.
Yeah, that was Larry Colmus with the call of this year's Kentucky Derby. Travis Stone, the announcement about the disqualification. Maximum Security moved from first all the way down to 17th, and that's not news now. It was at the time, certainly. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and joined now by our good friend, HRN analyst and the voice of Keeneland, Kurt Becker, who was part of that broadcast at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. And Kurt, first of all, happy holidays, happy new year, and good morning, my friend.
Hey, Mike, good morning to you as well. And it's a foggy morning here in central Illinois, and just working our way through the holidays and ready to look back on 2019.
Yeah, and it's a year, I said this at the top of the show, a year that might be remembered as the year that our sport changed, and certainly that could play in to the world's most famous horse race, the Kentucky Derby, because of what we saw this year on the first Saturday in May with
the stewards disqualifying a horse from the victory, putting him all the way down to 17th. And I touched on this too, that there were people, if you remember, on both sides of the fence. Many people thought, yeah, it's the right decision. They went by the letter of the law. They made the right call. Other people said, hey, wait a minute. You don't make that call in the Kentucky Derby. We sat there together along with Hall of Famer Gary Stevens above the finish line. Kurt, your thoughts on that decision by the stewards?
Well, I thought it was interesting that the day before the race in our production meeting, our producer, Howie Dinneroff, had brought that question up and had said, what happens if there's a claim of foul in this race? And I remember Gary saying, look, there might be a claim of foul, but they're not going to disqualify a horse from the win in the Kentucky Derby. He said, every year when I rode in it, the stewards would come to the jocks' quarters. They would give us the song and dance about, now we're watching you, and be careful, and mind your business, stay in your lane, or else. And he said they would walk out, and we would say that very thing. Come on, it's the Derby. They're not going to disqualify anybody. But I thought it, the key for me was, I tend to defer to someone who's got the expertise, and as a Hall of Fame jockey who won that race on a number of occasions, Gary Stevens would have the best perspective of anybody on our crew and practically anybody out there. And I can recall on the air, Gary's first reaction was to say, look, the stewards will review this claim of foul, but this horse is not coming down. But then there was a point where on the Jumbotron, the in-house TV department at Churchill put up a different angle of that replay. And on the air, Gary said, guys, I've got to back up. And he said, after the angle I just saw, I think this horse will be coming down. And, of course, that proved to be correct. And to answer your question directly, Mike, I think the stewards got it right. You touched on the fact folks say, look, it's the Derby. You've got 20 horses. You've got to give people leeway. My response to that is, if that's the case, then when they come on the track and they're playing my old Kentucky home, then if you're going to take that attitude to its logical conclusion, give the stewards a ticket to go get a hot dog and escort them out of the booth, and people would look at me and say, oh, but you can't do that. And my response was, well, yeah, apparently you can if you think no one should ever be disqualified from the win in the Derby. So I think that there was sufficient evidence to warrant the DQ, and they got it right.
Yeah, it had been a while since we've seen a horse's number taken down on the first Saturday in May.
It really had, and these kinds of things always bring up interesting historical discussions, and there are so many things that get swept away and forgotten with the passing of time. I mean, the only time that the winner had ever been disqualified prior to this was the post-race testing incident back in 1968 with Dancer's Image. So here you had the first time the winner had been DQ'd for an incident in the running of the race itself. That, I remember learning there had been some horses disqualified from third to fourth and this kind of thing. But it was truly unprecedented in the sense of a winner coming down for a situation in the running of the race. I think that had to do a lot, Mike, with the fact that, so often people will say, well, there's always bumping and banging in the Derby. You got to cut those guys some slack. I get it. 20 horses, a track built in 1875, and it's a fairly narrow racing surface, and I understand that. You've got to give the jockeys some leeway. I think the difference was there's difference between give them leeway coming past the stands the first time versus the unusual circumstance we had this year, where you had a wall of horses lined up battling the lead when they moved by the quarter pole turning for home. And I think that's what made the difference. It was so late in the race when this situation happened.
Yeah, the other thing that comes into play, the other subplot, if you will, to this year's Kentucky Derby is Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, who had yet to win a Derby until this year, and he does it in this fashion with Country House, who was put up via the disqualification. I don't think that Bill would tell you that that's the way he wanted to win his first Kentucky Derby, but I also think he would tell you he'll take it.
I agree. And Bill is the kind of trainer, he's been around long enough that I really believe that Bill Mott is going to be straightforward. And if he had deep down believed that the Stewarts had gotten it wrong, or that Country House did not deserve to be put up, and that war and that maximum security didn't deserve to come down, I think he would have said so. I think he would have gone on record and said, "Man, you know, this is not a good day. This is not how I wanted this to happen, etc." But he really handled it well, and I think Bill realized with his horse, Country House, he was kind of an innocent bystander. And, you know, as you recall, Country House, it wasn't necessarily that he had been interfered with, but when the Stewarts made their ruling regarding the interference against other horses, it just so happened, we all know how this goes, a horse like Country House just happened to benefit with the resulting DQ, and then he got promoted from second to first. You know, that was probably the most difficult thing to explain to the layperson who doesn't follow horse racing on a regular basis. Was, okay, but if Country House himself wasn't specifically interfered with, why does he get promoted to the win? Well, it's just kind of the chain reaction. When somebody further back, when the Stewarts say, well, this horse back here suffered interference, you can be in the position in which Country House was in, and you can just kind of be minding your own business and say, hey, great, we're going to benefit from this. It's not our fault. We have nothing to do with it, but this is just how these kinds of things go.
Yeah, and the horse that maybe took the brunt of it, War of Will, many people thought he was making a winning move in the Kentucky Derby when he was interfered with. He got his revenge 2 weeks later in Baltimore when he won the Preakness Stakes for Mark Cassie. That was an emotional moment for Mark, certainly, but a huge moment for War of Will. And part of the other fallout from the Kentucky Derby, we remember the lawsuit that was going to be lodged by owner Gary West of Maximum Security, but then he threw out the challenge. We got the news on Preakness morning that he was going to throw out a challenge to four other horses, up to $20 million to the owners of those four horses if they could beat his horse at any point moving forward. It just continued to gain momentum and grow legs, but when we got to Baltimore, it was all about War of Will.
It was, and I Mark Cassie, the trainer of War of Will, is someone who already had a great deal of respect in the industry, and I think that Mark's profile grew, and I believe that the respect the industry for him had, it already was large, and I think that level of respect grew with the way that Mark handled that entire 2 weeks, because it had to be frustrating. And I remember people said after the Derby, you know, why didn't you, as the trainer of War of Will, why didn't you launch your own claim of foul in the Derby? And he said, why? Why would I have done that? So we could have been promoted from eighth to seventh. You know, what good would that have done?
Yeah.
And Mark, Mark had an attitude that I think embodies the true spirit of why we do this, why we run the Triple Crown, why we go to the track, why we run these races. When Mark just simply said, we're going to settle this on the racetrack. I think we've got the best horse. We're heading on to Baltimore. We're heading on to the Preakness. And we're just going to hope the circumstances go better for us. And they did. Tyler Gaffalione gave War of Will an excellent ride in Baltimore and saved ground, sat on the rail, moved up the inside, and got the win. So I think that Mark Cassie, he really served as a reminder to all of us that one of the reasons we like the sport of horse racing is a sportsmanlike attitude, where Mark just simply said, no, we're just going to stay focused on what happens on the racetrack, and we're going to settle the issue there, and they did.
Yeah, well said. Visiting with HRRN analyst Kurt Becker. He is, of course, the voice of Keeneland. You can hear him in April and October every year when you tune into the Keeneland feed. Kurt, just a minute or two left here before I have to get to the next commercial break, but any other moments in 2019 that, when you think back on this year, kind of stand out to you and that you're going to remember as you look back on 2019?
Well, I think that probably we all tend to remember the most recent thing that we saw happen. But with that said, I really enjoyed seeing Vino Rosso put a cap on his magnificent racing career with the win he scored in the Breeders' Cup Classic, because it was a testament to a horse who had been on the scene for quite some time. When he ran the Triple Crown Series in the spring of 2018, of course, he hooked a very tough horse in Justify. He gave a fine account of himself. He had shown some brilliance, such as winning the Wood Memorial, but this was a horse who was an ongoing work in progress. I think it was a testament to the horse himself. It was a testament to the job done by Todd Fletcher. And, Mike, one of the most satisfying things as a fan of horse racing, watching a horse mature, watching a horse grow up. And Vino Rosso went from being a horse who was kind of big-eyed and just taking everything in around him as a three-year-old in the Triple Crown Series, that by the end of his four-year-old year this year, when he came on the track at Santa Anita, he was confident. One could see how he had matured physically. One could see that he had matured mentally. And he just had the look all week long of a horse who was in complete command of his surroundings. I think as a racing fan, for me, seeing Vino Rosso close his career the way he did was fun to watch.
Yeah, we'll continue to look back on the Breeders' Cup as part of this recap program, if you want to look at it in that fashion, our look back at 2019. We'll do that in the second half of the show with Bobby Newman, who will join me right around 9:20 Eastern. But good points there, Kurt Becker. Man, happy new year. As always, thrilled to have you part of our team and our HRN family, and can't wait to see you when you get back down here to the Bluegrass for that Keeneland January sale.
Mike, it's always a pleasure, and certainly want to wish everyone in the Bluegrass and across the racing world all the best for a happy new year, and looking forward to more great racing in 2020.
All right, Kurt Becker, ladies and gentlemen. Kurt, thanks, brother.
Thanks.
All right, Kurt Becker, cut him right off. I love that. Bam. That's it. He's gone. Yeah, you'll hear him at the January sale coming up in, just a little over a week here in Lexington, Kentucky. Going to get to another break. Come back with our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris and get you set for a busy second half of the program as we continue to look back on 2019. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. From the top Niarchos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Enticed, lengthening his stride, trying to get to this long shot Old Time Revival, and he collars him at the 16th pole. It will be Enticed. sharp in victory and wrapped up by Junior Alvarado as they stroll home in the Gotham.
Back in 2018, Enticed rolled in the Grade 3 Gotham, going a mile at Aqueduct, beating Grade 1 Champagne winner Firenze Fire in the process. That makes him the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. By Medaglia d'Oro, out of the three-time Grade 1 winner, It's Tricky. Enticed was a graded stakes winner on dirt at 2 and 3. He won the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club at 2 and the Grade 3 Gotham at 3, earning a 95 buyer speed figure. He's new to Jonah Bell Farm in 2020. Go to DarleyAmerica.com to learn about Enticed and the other Darley Stallions.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And they're into the stretch, and it is Jovia and Tex. Sir Winston comes up on the outside, and he got in front of War of Will. And Sir Winston has moved to the center of the track under Joel Rosario to take the lead. On the inside, Jovia fights on. Cassius is there. And then Tex between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes. And then it was Tassidus second, followed by Jovial third. It's a photo for fourth. The final time was 2 minutes, 28.30 seconds.
Sir Winston with that huge win in the Belmont Stakes, the test of the champion. We'll see Sir Winston back in action this weekend, of course. But Sir Winston capping off a huge year for trainer Mark Cassie. And for David Carroll, longtime trainer who has worked with Mark now as is his assistant. And he's done that for the past several years. And what a year it was. I remember catching up with David Carroll at the Cassie Barn at Keeneland before the Preakness and talking about War of Will and how special he thought War of Will could be. Well, he was proven right in Baltimore when War of Will won the Preakness. And then we know Sir Winston went on and took the Belmont, as you just heard. 3 weeks later, Mark Cassie winning 2/3 of the Triple Crown, doing it with those two different horses. David Carroll is our industry star of the week because of everything he does behind the scenes working with Mark and helping that operation. Mark Cassie's in the limelight. Mark Cassie's a spokesperson. But David Carroll is an integral part of that team. Every trainer, Mark included, will tell you that they can't have success without a great team behind them. We hear those stories all the time on our Wednesday night trainer talk shows. Every trainer will tell you that. It takes good assistants, good exercise riders. It takes a good team. Mark had his son Norman by his side for many, many years. That was his right-hand man. Norman is now out training on his own, off to a good start with his training career. And now it's Mark and David Carroll. So David, because of everything he does behind the scenes, working with all these top horses, is our industry star of the week. And this segment is presented by Stuart Morris. Just gave David a call. He was set to join us for this segment. He is, as you might expect, busy working at the barn. Not going to be able to step away from the horses to join us for a few minutes. That's fine. We completely understand. And David, we'll catch up with you down the road. But you are our industry star of the week. And this segment brought to you by Stuart Morris, who, of course, offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart knows that he's the source for success at the highest levels. And I know that he is because I've seen him do it year in and year out. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales coming up throughout the country. Hour 2 features the Big A, Anthony Stabile, looking back on this year's Belmont, Sir Winston, and looking back on some of the top moments with New York Racing, and of course with Saratoga. Some good ones there. As a matter of fact, our poll question this morning is, what is your top racing moment of 2019? One response says Midnight Bisou and Elate in the personal ensign. We'll ask Anthony about that. That may be the race of the year. Very well could be the race of the year. It was certainly as thrilling a finish as you're ever going to see. I'm sure that's going to be high on Big A's list coming up in just a couple of minutes. Another response saying, you know, it kind of worked out, talking about the Kentucky Derby. Just talked to Kurt about that in the last segment. Country House won his Derby. Maximum Security will win the three-year-old championship. I think that's right. I don't think Maximum Security is denied a three-year-old championship. Lost twice this year. Once when he was upset at Monmouth by King for a day. And the second one, the disqualification in the Kentucky Derby. Other than that, flawless. He's a good horse. Oh, I like this response. Your top racing moment of 2019. Jay chimes in and says, just being able to listen to the HRN coverage leading up to all the big races in 2019. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the shout out. All right, Big A kicks it off, 9 Eastern. That's just about right now. Bobby Newman, 9:20, looking back on the Breeders' Cup. And then at the end of hour number two, two features we produced for this year's Kentucky Derby. Never got to hear them live on air. They have never aired before until today. Trust me, you'll want to stay tuned for those two features. They're emotional, they're moving, and they're really, really good. Going to come back with hour number two right after this. We'll pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One will never forget. Looked impossible.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for. On the outside, Sullivan.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Equine Forum, the final Equine Forum show of 2019, rolling on this Saturday morning, December 28th, just 4 days away from all thoroughbreds turning 1 year older, meaning your current two-year-olds will be three and making their way down the road to Louisville on the first Saturday in May. The action going to heat up over the next couple of months with all the Derby preps. Now just 126 days. 8 hours, 47 minutes, and 8 seconds away from the Run for the Roses in 2020. Can't wait to be there to bring you all the coverage here on HRRN. We are your official radio home for all three Triple Crown races again in 2020 in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One, and very proud to be able to say that. We'll also bring you coverage of so many other top races, including the Pegasus World Cup. On January 25th, we'll be there at Gulfstream Park to bring you that coverage here, and that will kick off a very busy broadcast season for us. Our schedule will be posted shortly on our website, horseracingradio.net. Also want to make sure that I mention our podcast. If you haven't already checked them out, well, you're missing out. Head over to horseracingradio.net to do that. You can also do it, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Our poll question this morning, before we get started with the second half of the show, go to @HRN on Twitter to vote or to weigh in with your thoughts. The poll question this morning is quite simple. What is your top racing moment of 2019? It can be a race. It can be a performance by an individual. It can be just a moment that stands out to you. It doesn't even have to be a race. But the one moment that stands out to you when you think back on this year in 2019. Do that at @HRRN on Twitter. I mentioned that Sir Winston is back in action this weekend. The Belmont Stakes winner returning to the races. And what a performance he put in early June to take the test of the champion. We were there with that coverage. The Big A, Anthony Stabile, is in New York all year long, and he was there hosting our undercard coverage that afternoon. And Big A is with me now. Anthony, first of all, Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, Baron. Happy New Year to you and to everybody out in HR and Nation. I wrapped up Red Brand Radio and the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, saying it yesterday, but we'll say it one more time. Without the fans, and one of my favorite hours of the week is the call-in show that I get to share with them. Without the fans, we have nothing. So Happy New Year, prosperous, and hopefully it's a profitable one, most important when it comes to the sport of Kings.
Well, it was profitable for those who bet on Sir Winston in the Belmont Stakes this year. When you think back on that particular day, and there were other great performances on the undercard, but that particular race, that moment when Sir Winston gave Mark Cassie a second Triple Crown victory this year, what are some of the things that stand out to you, Big A?
Yeah, I think the two things you took out of the Belmont Stakes this year was the fact that War of Will, after everything that happened in the Kentucky Derby, and to answer the poll question briefly, I don't think anybody can look back on 2019 and the first thing they're going to remember isn't going to be they DQ'd the Kentucky Derby winner. I mean,
yeah.
To me, that's it. Everything else that happened is Secretariat in front by 31 and everybody else is second. You know, the fact that after everything that happened, after he won the Preakness, that War of Will was the horse to take part in all three Triple Crown races this year. And the fact that his stablemate, among others, beat him that day. The thing I'll take out of that, Donato specifically, was the ride Joel Rosario gave Sir Winston. You know, to be a little bit of a handicapper more than anything else. You want it to be inside throughout the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival at Belmont Park. And Rosario knew it. He knew it Preakness Day with Everfast. And he gave him a ground-saving ride to get second to War of Will. And then he did it again. It was a fantastic ride. Horse put in a brave effort. He passed some horses. He had to dice his way through, and it was a shame that he went to the sidelines because, you know, we had one of those years, obviously, with three different Triple Crown race winners, and I would have liked to have seen him, especially with his desire to go along. I think he would have made the second half of the season a little more interesting because of his ability to take the marathon distances. I look forward to seeing him back today. You know, they got some rain. They were off the turf yesterday, and we'll see. I mean, I would think Mark's going to run him either surface, right? I mean, we know he's accomplished on the dirt, so we'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to seeing a horse like him who, you know, has that big, long stride and can get the added distance next year.
Yeah, a horse that could very well be a major player in that older horse, the handicap division in 2020. I don't see any reason why he can't be. I know he was just, you know, 1-for-5 this year with that win in the Belmont Stakes. But he is he's a really honest horse, and he seems to put in his run every time. So, and he's bred to be a really good horse by Awesome Again out of an Fleet Alex mare.
Yeah, like I said, they don't write races long enough for him. And
yep,
in a time of the game where we see a lot of horses struggle to get to 10 furlongs. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the kind of horse that does excel at those distances, and we'll see what happens. He's got a lot of his main three-year-old competition, the top ones anyway, going to the breeding shed, a majority of them, and we'll see what he does against what's left of the older division as he matures. I'm looking forward, really looking forward to seeing him return. He cost me a lot of money in the Belmont Stakes, yet I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I made
hashtag beast
with Tacitus on top. I did not reverse it because I'm an idiot, but I'm looking forward to his return today.
Yeah, is this where I'm supposed to say hashtag beast?
Yeah, hashtag beast. Beast was a bumbling buffoon this year. The Beast should have made some money. Quick pat on the back. When he ran, I think, in the Withers, I picked him third on one of my other gigs on Talking Horses. And I said to Andy Sterling, I said, you know, this horse looks like the kind of horse that'll do well in the Belmont Stakes. 4 months before he ran in the Belmont Stakes, and I didn't make a reverse, so my fault.
Yeah, and for people that don't know what we're talking about when I say hashtag beast, if you haven't heard that before, the Big A, every year before the Belmont Stakes, after Preakness, for those 3 weeks, turns into the Beast of the Belmont. And we have a thing, hashtag beast, on social media for Anthony, and that's where that comes from. So if people didn't understand what we were going with there, That's where that comes from. In terms of other moments in New York, whether it's Belmont or Saratoga that stand out to you, certainly one listener tweeted to us, Big A, and said Midnight Bisou and Elate in that personal ensign at Saratoga, which is one of the maybe the race of the year. That was spectacular.
Yeah, when you think about the summer we had at Saratoga, obviously Travers Day is always on the top of the list. We got to see that marquee matchup, and for the second time, Elate was involved in a marquee matchup in their personal ensign and took the wrong end of it last year with Abel Tasman, this past season with Midnight Bisou. And, it'll be sad to see Elate go to the breeding shed now, because she's been a star at Saratoga the last few summers. And she was again. I mean, that was one of the best races I had seen all year. For me personally, I was a big Annals of Time fan for Chad Brown and Seth Klarman and Klarvich Stables, and him to come back and win a Grade One 3 years after winning his first Grade One, taking the Sword Dancer, was a memorable moment. You know, Travers Day, of course, is about the Travers ultimately, and Shug getting it done with Code of Honor 30 years after doing it with Easy Goer, and you know, a couple of wins in between. But when you think back about that day, we got to see Midnight Bisou and Elate. Midnight Bisou winds up second in the distaff. We get to see Mattoli win the Forgo. Mattoli comes back, of course, and wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint. We get to see Code of Honor and Tacitus, who wind up coming back to run 1-3 in the Jockey Club Gold Cup later on in the year. And it just goes to show you how that Travers Day card, I mean, we can go back, right, Arrogate, Gone Run, all of these horses in the last few years, like, it's just cemented Saratoga as the summer place. You know, when you get to the Spa, you're gonna see amazing things. We saw some weird things this year. We saw a canceled Saturday. I got to spend a Saturday during Saratoga in the lake. I never thought that was ever going to happen in my life. But that oppressive heat on Haskell Day, we had to postpone a card. And, you know, you saw stuff like that, some weird things. But it was about the racing. Sister Charlie coming back and having a second Diana win. And then going back to win the Beverly D. Arlington, you know, for the second time. You look back at races like the Travers. You look back at McKenzie, really with the biggest win of his career, a horse that probably would be labeled by many an underachiever so far. But he gets the biggest win of his career in one of the most prestigious Grade Ones out there, the Whitney, a couple of weeks after Mrs. Whitney passes away. You see Preservationist, another horse who would overcome a ton of injuries, and Jimmy Jerkins and our friends at Centennial Farms plugging away and keeping at it, and him getting his Grade One glory in the closing weekend feature to Woodward. And, you know, you got to see some nice two-year-olds. Of course, 'tis the law for the Saratoga folks to bring you back to Funny Side. And, yeah, just a lot of fun up there. You know, Chad Brown dominance, the Ortiz brothers, we've grown to expect this. Just another fantastic summer up at the Old Spa.
Yeah, so many positive stories in a year that was kind of overshadowed by the negativity that took place at Santa Anita, at least in the national news anyway. I think people would look at this year for horse racing and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is, you know, it's a cruel sport, it's this, it's that, because of everything that took place and all the attention that got from national news organizations outside of thoroughbred racing. But inside the sport, so many positive stories, so many good things that happened, and races, so many races that were run without incident, you know, and these are the stories that I want to get out that I think are important for people to understand. But I know on a show like this, in some respects, I'm preaching to the choir, but Big A, those are the storylines that racing as a whole needs to get out.
You know, it's funny. I think the racing gods kind of protected us a little bit with that Derby DQ. Because without that Derby DQ, and I'm serious when I talk about the Derby gods, a lot of people joke around. I am deadly serious when I talk about them. If you don't have that Derby DQ, is all people are going to remember about 2019 was everything that's happened negatively in the sport. Well, now you have this really like once in a lifetime experience. No, but we're never going to see this again. I couldn't. You couldn't lay a price on the Derby winner getting disqualified again.
Let me ask you this question.
There's no price you can play.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Do you think this now opens the door for, now that we've set a precedent, that they will make this move? The stewards will disqualify the Derby winner if they feel that it's warranted. Does this now open the door for more jockeys to take a shot and say, hey, I'm going to claim foul. I'm going to lodge an objection in this race because we know that they'll make that move. I'm going to take my shot at winning the Kentucky Derby.
I don't think the frivolous claims of foul will be allowed. What I'm hoping it does is, I'm hoping it does clean up that run into the first turn a little bit. That would be nice. That run into the first turn could get a little, a little hairy. And maybe these guys and gals think twice about making it a little tighter, going for a hole that's not actually a hole. I like to call it a haul, right? No E at the end. There's a haul there. There's no hole there.
I don't think you'll ever get that element out of the Kentucky Derby. I don't think you will. And of course, that's not where the disqualification, came into play.
Right.
That's
no,
not
no,
where the
no,
incident
no,
took
I know.
Place.
But I know that I think it was very important that on our biggest stage, we showed the world that no matter that it was the biggest stage, that we adjudicated it properly. Now, look, they put me up for a lot of money, so I of course, am going to say, take them down. But it was the right thing to do. And I think if you poll everyone, you're going to get more people that agreed with the decision than disagreed with the decision. I think that's very important on the biggest stage. You know, in a day and age where every umpire, Major League Baseball is looking to go to a robot to call balls and strikes, and I believe that's going to happen in some of the lower-level minor leagues.
don't get me started on that.
Well, you know what I mean? Football. I mean, I'm going to tell you, you're a diehard Steelers fan. In a game where defense isn't allowed to be played anymore and there's always controversy regarding calls, we got the biggest call. It's the biggest call in the history of our sport. We got it right. And most people wouldn't say, well, you shouldn't be so happy he got something right. But, we got it right. And I think that was very important.
I said it at the top of the show, and I use the same analogy and the same parallel to other sports in the officiating. The stewards are officials in thoroughbred racing. That's what they are. And they have the power to make a game-changing decision, just like any other official. And in this case, they followed the rule book. They went by the letter of the law and said, yes, that's an infraction. That's a foul. It's a foul in a 12-5 claimer. So why isn't it a foul in the Kentucky Derby? You know, it's like, do you swallow the whistle in the final minute of a basketball game, the final seconds of a basketball game, because it's a foul that would have been called any other time? You know, and they didn't.
And
they did not swallow the whistle.
And just when we thought we were out of the woods in New York, here comes the Jockey Club Gold Cup and Vino Rosso and Code of Honor. And you get put into another situation. I've had a lot of arguments with people over this. I had no dog in that fight. That was absolutely the right call. You know, they tell you that when the contact is initiated, and there was contact at least two times initiated by Vino Rosso, cost has to come down. But it's funny, you get through Saratoga relatively unscathed, and you're saying to yourself, all right, we'll be in good shape. And then sure enough, the Super Saturday, here's another big DQ. I mean, these are big, big DQs. These are DQs that affect the shape of Breeders' Cup races, that affected the landscape of the Triple Crown. And I think we got them both right. I think that's very, very important. I think that's something that we should champion and we should pat ourselves on the back for in 2019, getting those calls right. And I think we have to applaud, namely the folks at Santa Anita, for trying to get it right and to point this thing in the right direction. I think a great case in point was postponing opening day. They saw that forecast. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. We can't control the weather, unfortunately. But they did the right thing in postponing that opening. I know people were upset. Tradition, I get it. I get the whole thing. I'm the biggest romantic and traditionalist there is out there. Postponing was the right decision. Leaves us with an 11 race card, 7 stakes today. We cover them all on the weekend stakes preview presented by Narrow Bets. You can listen to the podcast. And, you know, again, an example of getting it right. I know people weren't happy, but I think they got it right, and they're getting it right out of Santa Anita now.
Yeah, another example. I said it at the top of the show. You're going to look back years from now, whether it's 3, 4, 5 years up the road, we're going to look back on 2019 as the year this sport changed. and a lot of that change being initiated by what happened at Santa Anita. Something had to happen. Something had to move the sport in the right direction again, and that's taking place. So whether you like it, you don't like it, the happy medium's probably somewhere in the middle, but this is going to be looked at as the year our sport changed. That's another great example with the cautionary postponement of opening day at Santa Anita. Big A, listen, I got to run, got to get to another break. Happy New Year. Thanks for taking a few minutes here this morning, and we'll look forward to hearing you coming up next week on Red Brand Radio.
Yeah, we'll bring in the new year on Wednesday. Bobby Newman filling in for Steve Grabowski. We'll have racing from Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita. It all kicks off 3 p.m. Eastern time, so the hangover will be in the rearview mirror, and you'll be able to listen to some world-class racing.
Perfect. Bobby Newman in the on-deck circle. He's coming up next as well to look back on the Breeders' Cup. Big A, Happy New Year, brother.
You too, Mike.
All right. And, let's get to that break. We'll come back, and we'll look back on the Breeders' Cup with Bobby. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery won impressively in his 2-year-old debut at Santa Anita. From there, he captured the Grade 3 Bob Hope Stakes and completed his juvenile campaign with a dominant performance in the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity. At 3, the top-rated son of Candy Ride sizzled in the San Felipe. Now, his much-anticipated first crop weanlings are bringing top dollar in the sales ring. Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Ottiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Around the far turn, Acclimate and Bandwa in their 1-2. United is a length and a half behind them. Then Channel Maker and Arclo, Bricks and Mortar, racing in traffic here. And on his inside is Anthony Van Dyke. And they're into the stretch, and it's Bandwa. Bandwa's taking the lead on the outside. United is there. Bricks and Mortar's got a clear path. Alunac is diving for one inside. And then it's Acclimate. Here comes Bricks and Mortar. And he rushes up on the outside of United, who digs in. These two down to the wire. Bricks and Mortar. He's built like a champion. United was second, and it's a photo for third in the Breeders' Cup turf.
Welcome back. Mike Pena in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you with me on the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, as we continue to look back on this year, 2019, this final program of the year coming your way. throughout the country on SiriusXM satellite radio, on affiliates across the country, and of course streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion, simply head back and check out the podcast after we finish up this morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. That was Larry Colmus with the call of this year's Breeders' Cup Turf, a sixth consecutive win this year for Bricks and Mortar. Not a sixth consecutive. I think he's rattled off seven consecutive, but six for six in 2019. Five of those grade ones, and a victory that many people feel will cement his case for Horse of the Year and maybe lead to him picking up the trophy on January 23rd. Well, Bobby Newman was part of our Eclipse Award-winning broadcast team this year at Santa Anita, so he was trackside. We were back by the paddock. He had a trackside location. He was right there when Bricks and Mortar crossed the finish line. Bobby, first of all, good morning, and wow, what a year for Bricks and Mortar.
What a year for Bricks and Mortar. Thanks for having me on this morning. And he needed every part of that tremendous year, I think, to get him to probably win the Eclipse Award, because he had stiff competition in other divisions from other horses and fillies who were also having, you know, undefeated years of their own, or at least Horse of the Year worthy years of their own.
Yeah, Midnight Bisou was in the running. Of course, she came up short in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. If she had won that race, it would have made things very interesting for all of us voters coming up over the next week or so when we have to submit our ballots. But, I mean, look, that victory by Bricks and Mortar really did cement, in my opinion anyway, cemented his case for this Horse of the Year title. I don't know where else you go for that title. Mottoli was brilliant in winning the Breeders' Cup Sprint, but I don't know if that, you know, really is enough to get him Horse of the Year. You know, Vino Rosso, big win in the Classic. But to me, it's all about Bricks and Mortar when you look at the horse that's going to be named Horse of the Year.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I thought that it was his award to lose going into the Breeders' Cup. There were actually maybe four horses that had a chance. Bricks and Mortar, undefeated going into the Breeders' Cup Turf. Midnight Bisou, undefeated last year going into the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Mottoli, who had only been defeated once, and it was a troubled trip, but had won sprinting all the way up to a mile. And then even Sister Charlie, who I think would have been a long shot of the four, but she had an undefeated season going into the Breeders' Cup. So there were a lot of there were several horses that had a chance going in. But I think with all the grade ones on his docket, that Bricks and Mortar was certainly the favorite, and he did not disappoint. The biggest question mark I think most people had going into the Breeders' Cup Turf was whether or not Bricks and Mortar really wanted to go a mile and a half. And as it turned out, he needed every bit of that mile and a half to get up and get the win.
Bobby Newman with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I mentioned, Bobby, your broadcast position for the Breeders' Cup was trackside, right by the winner's circle. What are some other things that stand out to you when you think back on that experience over the course of the 2 days at Santa Anita?
Well, one of the things was I was one of the only people who didn't have to pay $400 to be in that part of the racetrack for the Breeders' Cup. But aside from that, there were so many stories. Aside from just Horse of the Year going into the races, you know, we mentioned the four of them who had chances at Horse of the Year. Looking at Friday's Breeders' Cup and the two marquee events, the Juvenile and the Juvenile Fillies, going into the Juvenile, you know, earlier on in the week, we thought it was a three-horse race between Dennis's Moment, Eight Rings, and Maxfield. Maxfield, unfortunately, had to scratch out of the race. In fact, just What a brutal week it was for trainer Brendan Walsh. Such a nice guy, and he has two legitimate shots on Future Stars Friday and in Vitalogy and Maxfield, and they both end up scratching and coming out of the races. Thankfully, they're both okay, and we're going to get to see them as three-year-olds. But so going into the Juvenile, it's down to, we think it's basically a match race between Dennis's Moment and Eight Rings. Dennis's Moment stumbles badly out of the gate. Eight Rings throws in a complete conquer, and we get Storm the Court at some gigantic odds that almost nobody thought would get the job done, who comes through. Juvenile Fillies, on the other hand, there were four fillies who had flawless records coming into the race. British Idiom, Donna Valace, Bast, Wicked Whisper. That race did not disappoint. British Idiom winning the battle that day in defeating Donna Valace in a real thriller of a juvenile fillies. And then on Saturday, a lot of people thought that the race of the weekend would be the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I don't think that race disappointed. It certainly on paper looked like maybe the toughest race as far as the upper echelon of that that division. He had Mattioli, Chancelot, Catalina Cruiser, who I think was compromised by the inside post. And then don't forget we had that very controversial scratch of Imperial Hint, who the trainer couldn't understand why the horse was scratched. He certainly would have been one of the favorites in the race. He ended up having to come out a couple days early. Mattioli, of course, getting that monstrous win, very impressive, and doing all he could to, at least at the time, show that he was Horse of the Year worthy. Unfortunately for him, get the win in the Breeders' Cup turf, and that probably would shatter his chances. How about the Breeders' Cup Mile? It was once again the fillies taking on the boys, and as we've seen seemingly every two or three years now, the fillies have no problem running against the boys in the Breeders' Cup Mile. They ran 1-2 this year in Uni and Got Stormy, and that race, more than any other, it just seems like the fillies, they have no problem. They, when they're taking on their male counterparts, it's something in the back of our minds that, you know, we think it's going to be a negative when you see the fillies running against the boys, but when they're this caliber of filly and mare and they're this well traveled, it doesn't seem to matter at all. And then of course, you know, other great stories, you know, the Breeders' Cup Classic is always an exciting race. You've got the Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile. By the way, I'm always going to say Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile because as long
just
as
because
they're
you
good
can
enough to sponsor it, and we're allowed to say that, the Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile. And what an exciting race that was. A race that on paper looked like it was loaded with speed. You had Omaha Beach coming off a monstrous win in a comeback effort in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. Richard Mandela didn't know where he was going to send him. He could have gone in the sprint. He could have gone in the mile, dirt mile rather. He could have gone in the classic. He goes in the Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile. And unfortunately, it's just far, far too far back to get up and get the win as Spun to Run out-sprints him early on and goes wire to wire. Just a tremendous 2 days of racing. And, you know, I'm not going to mention some of the unpleasantries and, you know, the obvious what happened in the Breeders' Cup Classic. But aside from that, two very, very exciting days of racing. And I'll tell you this, Mike, going into that weekend with all that happened in 2019 in the racing industry, and most of it seemed like it was bad, we weren't sure what the crowds were going to be like at Santa Anita those 2 days. We weren't sure what kind of handle they would do. And boy, I think most of us were wrong. The crowds came out big time. There was huge handle on both days. And it proves to me, at least somewhat, that despite everything bad that has happened in this game and negative, you know, dark cloud and negative thinking and oh, woe is me and that kind of stuff that's going on, people still love this game. And they love playing the game. They love being around the game. We just want the game to get better, and that's what it is.
Bobby Newman with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bobby, as soon as I finish up here at 10 o'clock Eastern, I'm making a phone call to Big Ass Fans to see if I can get him as a sponsor for 2020, just so you have more opportunities to work that into our broadcast.
Absolutely. Tell them to send hats to us, whatever they want us to do.
I'm glad you brought up the Breeders' Cup Mile, because that to me was one of the performances in the races with Uni and Got Stormy that is not being talked about enough, in my opinion. And the other storyline there that I love, because I'm a huge fan of his, is the performance of El Tormenta under Eurico Rosa da Silva, who finished sixth in that race. But as you mentioned, that was a salty race. A sixth-place finish, certainly no disgrace. But Eurico, announcing his retirement this year. His career is now finished. He wrapped it up at the end of the Woodbine season, and I was asking people to weigh in on our social media account as to what moments stood out to them in 2019. That's certainly one that I remember, because Yuriko is as classy as they come. He is still at the height of his game, and he walks away with 2,286 career victories. And we want to wish Yuriko all the best in retirement. He said he will still be around the racetrack. He wants to stay involved. He is a certified life coach, so he'll be working with some of the riders and some of the folks around the track, and can't wait to see him when we get back to Woodbine for Queens Plate again later in 2020.
Yeah, a classy guy, and somebody that's very easy to root for. Unfortunately, El Tormenta, I don't know if it was a case of him not running his best that day, or maybe he was just, you know, facing a little bit tougher than what he is normally seeing.
Yeah.
But he split the field. He finished sixth. I think he was only beaten maybe four and a half lengths. So it's not like he was, you know, 1,000 miles back in the field. And they ran so fast that day. I think they went 1:32.2 for the mile. So El Tormenta, for all we know, may have run his race that day and just simply was a little bit overmatched, but it certainly was not the fault of Yuriko da Silva, who gave him a good ride and goes out on top, which is something you don't get to say not only about people in horse racing, but, you know, how often do people get to go out like Barry Sanders went out in football, where, you know, people think he's got, you know, 5 or 6 good years left in him. He says, nope, I'm good. I'm ready to go. And and that's it. You know, those of us who are fans were a little bit sad that we don't get to see somebody like da Silva going forward. But it sounds like he's not going to be he's not going to go into a cocoon. And we're going to, you know, you may still see him around the racetrack here and there. And for those people who follow Woodbine regularly, I'm sure that they're very happy that he's happy.
Well, Bobby, listen, really appreciate the visit here this morning. Thanks for spending a little time with me and with HRN Nation. And they're going to hear a lot from you in 2020. You'll be part of many, many of our broadcasts throughout the year, including the Pegasus World Cup on January 25th. That's our next live race broadcast coming up on the network. It'll kick off a big season in 2020. And looking forward to having you part of the team again, my friend.
Looking forward to it, and you know, hopefully for those of us who are looking forward to the Pegasus, let's get Omaha Beach to run a good race today in the Malibu, and hopefully his next stop will be the Pegasus.
Yep, well said. Bobby, Happy New Year.
All right, you too, my friend.
All right, Bobby Newman here on HRRN. Our next segment is going to feature two of our feature pieces that we produced for the Kentucky Derby. Did not get to air them this year because of the scratch of those two horses that were involved in these features. You won't want to miss them. They were spectacular. They have never before been aired anywhere, and we're going to have them for you. I'll play them coming up in our next segment. But first, it is time for your KTA, KTOB, Kentucky Bred Spotlight. And remember that Kentucky is the best place to breed, sell, train, and race. With record purses at public auction, purse money in the state at an all-time high, a strong year-round racing circuit, lucrative Kentucky Thoroughbred Breeders Incentive Fund awards, and a Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund purse supplements in certain designated races. Of course, you have the state-of-the-art training centers and world-class breeding operations, which is all part of why you should breed, sell, train, and race here in Kentucky. For more information on basing your thoroughbred business in the bluegrass, all you have to do is go to KentuckyBred.org or KHRC.KY.gov, and you can learn more about breeding and racing and selling and training here in the bluegrass state. I'll get to a break. I'll come back with those two features. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a 3-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his grade one collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And 2-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tale, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, make plans to join us for one of the biggest days of the year, opening day at Spectacular Santa Anita this Saturday, December 28th. All fans will receive our traditional wall calendar, free with paid admission, and be sure to come early on Saturday. First post time is at 11 a.m. and admission gates open at 9 o'clock. The Grade 1 $300,000 Run Happy Malibu and the Grade 1 $300,000 La Brea Stakes will highlight an incredible 11-race card that will also include the Grade 1 American Oaks, the Grade 2 Mathis Brothers Mile, the Grade 2 San Antonio and the Grade 3 Robert J. Frankel Stakes. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Athena Springs Stallion, Ghost Zapper. The consistently brilliant sire of 11% black type winners, including Breeders' Cup champion and Eclipse champion female sprinter, Judy the Beauty.
Judy the Beauty! Judy the Beauty! One and a head and I thrill it!
Santa Anita handicap winner, Shaman Ghost.
Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
And Whitney handicap hero, Moreno.
100 yards from home, and it's Moreno! Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score!
In 2019, Ghost Zapper is the sire of double-digit stakes winners for the 7th straight year, and his current stars include Del Mar Futurity winner Nucky and 3-year-old Philly sensation Guarana.
On to another impressive outing here. Guarana 2 for 2, and she's an Acorn winner.
Guarana has won the coaching club American Oaks over Point of Honor.
Consistently brilliant, Ghost Zapper, standing at Adina Springs. Visit adinastallions.com.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
As they run towards the top of the stretch in the Arkansas Derby, Omaha Beach, 3/4 of a length, Improbable attacks on the outside, and these two have sprinted 3 lengths clear of Long Range Toddy. Then comes Laughing Fox, Omaha Beach, Improbable in second. Omaha Beach is now a length in front. Improbable gonna try him one more time. Omaha Beach, Improbable to the outside. Omaha Beach just won't let him by yet. Improbable second. Omaha Beach. Yes! The 83rd Arkansas Derby goes to Omaha Beach over Improbable.
Vic Stauffer with the call of this year's Arkansas Derby, another signature moment of 2019. It was a dominating win for Omaha Beach, and one that would lead to him being the morning line favorite for this year's Kentucky Derby. As we know, Omaha Beach would scratch the morning of the race and not be able to compete. It was devastating for his Hall of Fame trainer, Richard Mandela, who has yet to win a Kentucky Derby, and devastating for his owner, Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms. I mentioned that we had produced a couple of features for our Kentucky Derby coverage in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. Didn't get to air them, obviously, because the two horses that were the focus of those features were scratched. One was Omaha Beach, the other was Hi-Cal for Kieran McLaughlin. So I'm going to play those two features for you now, as I think they need to be heard. They're much more human interest oriented, and I think you're really going to enjoy them. So for Rick Porter and Omaha Beach and Rick's operation, it's about so much more than just one race.
Owner Rick Porter has been fortunate to participate in several Kentucky Derbies. Chamois Davis, Hard Spun, Eight Bells, Frisian Fire, and Normandy Invasion have all run for the roses. This year, Omaha Beach will carry Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith in his distinctive red and white quartered silks.
Hard Spun was when I really thought I had, had a chance. And when he was turning for home, I really felt we had a very good chance of winning the race. And I thought Street Sense was blocked in, but old Calvin got him through on a tight spot close to the rail, and we lost. Eight Bells ran a very incredible race, but Big Brown was just too tough. Freezing Fire went off the favorite and beat One Horse. That was very disappointing. And Normandy, I had so much fun bringing in the World War II veterans that have been in Normandy, been on Omaha Beach, and it was just great to have them there. They were excited, and Normandy looked like he was sitting in good position, and he just didn't get it done.
Porter remains optimistic for his run with Omaha Beach this year.
This time, I think we have a very good chance, but as you know, it's very hard to win the Kentucky Derby with 20 horses. There's good competition, and you got to get a good trip. I think Mike Smith is as good as anybody at getting that good trip. And, he usually breaks very well out of the gate and then settles down, relaxes on his own, and we usually stay very close to the front.
With a soft spot in his heart for American veterans, Porter often names his horses with World War II in mind. This year, Sachin Jet is flying injured soldiers from Iran and Afghanistan who are participating in the Homes for Troops program.
They build smart homes for these people that are really injured, that really can't get around their house and function in their house. So I'll get a chance to see some that were in another war.
Porter recently overcame serious health issues himself, which makes this year's Derby run even more poignant.
There wasn't much left they could do for me, and I was fortunate enough to have a friend in racing who called Wayne Hughes, who has a connection through his generosity in many ways to this blood cancer research that was going on. And Wayne got me in the clinical trial, and it saved my life. I would have never gotten in it, I don't think, I've been in full remission 2 years this June, so it's a miracle.
Trainer Dick Mandela has never won the Kentucky Derby, and neither has Porter, but it's on both men's bucket list.
I think Dick wants to win it more than I do, but we both want to win it badly, and it means a lot because it would just be the icing on the cake if we could get this Derby, but they're awful tough to win, even if you go off one of the best horses. There's a lot of good competition in this race, and when that cavalry charge breaks out of that gate, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, we'll never know if Omaha Beach would have won the Kentucky Derby this year, but we know he turned out to be pretty darn good, and he's going to go to the post as a heavy, heavy favorite. He's 4-5 on the morning line today at Santa Anita in the Run Happy Malibu Stakes. He'll face four other rivals in that five-horse field, including Roadster, who ran in the Kentucky Derby. He's 3-1 in that race later today, but it's all about Omaha Beach, and we'll see if he can run a big race today and punch his ticket to the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream on January 25th. And, good stuff from Rick Porter, and my thanks to Jude Feld for writing and voicing that particular feature. The other feature that we did not get to air involves Hi-Cal, who scratched earlier in the week, unable to go to the post because of some issues there with him. For Kieran McLaughlin, who is a native of Lexington, and Rajiv Miraj, who grew up in Jamaica, winning the Kentucky Derby would, be certainly a dream come true, as it would be for many people. But as you'll hear, their bond is about so much more than just racing.
The Kentucky Derby is quite possibly the most coveted prize in the thoroughbred sport. For trainers and jockeys around the globe, it is number one on the bucket list, despite the knowledge that even to be in it on the first Saturday of May is an accomplishment.
But only one three-year-old will wear the garland of roses, as High Cal's trainer Karen McLaughlin explains.
You grow up in Lexington and it's all horses, and the Kentucky Derby is the pinnacle race. It's just the toughest race to win and everybody's dream to win, whether you're a groom, exercise rider, jockey, owner, trainer. But winning this would be huge for Shadwell and Sheikh Hamdan and his people all around the world, because he's a great man and has touched so many lives in the industry. And one of them, obviously, is mine and my family. So there's not many people that deserve the Kentucky Derby more than Sheikh Hamdan. So it would be fabulous to win it. I took the long way around to get to the Derby, living 70 miles away and going to Dubai and back a few times. But it's tough to get there, and we're proud to even have a horse in the starting gate.
Training horses is a grueling job when everything goes smoothly, but Kieran faced a huge stumbling block early in his career.
I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1998, and I didn't know what MS was. And when I was diagnosed, I went into a deep state of depression. I did not get off the couch for 30 days, and I had snapped out of it probably 30 days after when I got off the couch and decided to go tackle this and fight it and figure it out, and I flew back to Dubai. But I never thought of retiring. I love the horses. I love to work. I love the relationships with people, owners, the staff, everybody. And Sheikh Hamdan, who owns his horse, I went back to Dubai to work for. And we just kept going. And once I got on medication, I was doing better and better. I like to say I have MS, but it doesn't have me. 20 years later, I'm still going strong, so I feel blessed.
High Cal's jockey, Rajiv Miraj, also has overcome tremendous adversity, suffering severe injuries in a racetrack spill that kept him out of action for nearly a year and a half.
It's always hard to come back from these kind of injuries, because physically and mentally, you go through a lot. And I'm very thankful to have the opportunity to ride again and to be riding at a high level, winning races, big races all over. I remember when I had a brace on my back and I was house ridden for months upon months, and Karen and Jolie and Winston, all these guys would come over and visit me and play a little poker when I can't even leave my house. So we've really come a long way, and to be able to have a chance to come from that and be riding the Kentucky Derby, it's just surreal sometimes. But, you know, it gives me a lot of encouragement to never give up and just keep pushing.
Rajiv credits Kieran as being an inspiration to him during his recovery.
He's definitely a role model, Kieran, because injury to me is just for my job. But what he's gone through, it's a life change. You know, he had to battle this thing for his health. I mean, for him to go through all that and then get up every morning and come to work with a smile on his face and always be one of the most upbeat person to be around, that's very inspiring to me, because I like to be around positive people. And we always get a good vibe from each other, because we're always laughing and smiling every day. It's like, you know, at the track, it's a good energy to be around him. You would never think that he's been going through what he has when you see the smile on his face every day.
Kieran's Derby dream includes Rajiv.
Rajiv and I go do a lot of things off the track and on the track. It'd be fabulous to win it with him and his team of people and my team of people, his agent. Winston's a good friend and family friend, so it'd be priceless. It would be unbelievable feeling.
Rajiv puts it all in perspective.
Since I can remember myself, there's only one thing that I really wanted to do, was be a jockey and ride in big races like the Kentucky Derby. That was always my dream. It goes to show you the power of the Kentucky Derby and horse racing, that Karen is in Lexington, growing up right next door, wants to win the Derby. I'm growing up as a kid in Kingston, Jamaica, wanting to one day be in the Derby. And also Sheikh Hamdan is in Dubai, and one of his biggest dreams probably is to win the Kentucky Derby. And we're all here together many, many years later going after that dream. So I'm just fortunate to be living my dream, to be able to have a chance to even probably win the Derby.
I'm Yeah, my thanks again to Jude for all his hard work with that piece, and to our producer here, Lee Della Pina, who just does a fantastic job putting those together with the music and everything. And that truly is one of my favorite pieces that we have ever produced in the 15 years of being on air here on HRN. That just spectacular when you think about Kieran and Rajiv and the relationship and everything that each of them have had to overcome. They won't get a chance, or they didn't get a chance at the Kentucky Derby this year. But you have to feel like a Derby victory is out there somewhere for Kieran and for Rajiv. And my thanks to both of them for taking time to visit with us for that feature, too. Going to get to one final break. We'll come back and wrap up this show for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
The championship meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. Come and enjoy the heart-pounding excitement of live thoroughbred horse racing, showcasing some of the best jockeys and horses in the world, all while experiencing the best in VIP hospitality in South Florida. Make sure to book your experience for the Pegasus World Cup 2020 on Saturday, January 25th, blending entertainment, innovation, and thoroughbred horse racing like no other event of its kind. For more information on the championship meet or Pegasus World Cup, visit GulfstreamPark.com. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohamed, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappet, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway stallion Caraconti, a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4 fifths, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 first crop stakes winners and 2 additional stakes placed 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with 2-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, thoroughbred jockey, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Well, my thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning as we look back on 2019. Hope you enjoyed it. Blaze Benjamin from Coolmore talking about the leading freshman sire, American Pharoah, Kurt Becker, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, Bobby Newman, and those two features you just heard in the last segment. My thanks to everybody for helping to make this show possible here this morning. Do want to take a quick second here to mention the loss of a good friend. You've heard him on this show many, many times over the past couple of years. That is Al Young from Four Roses, the senior brand ambassador who suddenly passed away with his family on Christmas Day this year. He was surrounded by his family He had been with Four Roses for more than 50 years, started there in 1967, and Al is somebody who became a friend to me and is certainly going to be missed by many, many people all over the world. And our condolences, our thoughts, our prayers with Al's family at this very difficult time. Don't forget, we're back with Red Brand Radio coming up on Wednesday. We'll be here with you. Anthony will have all of that coverage. Of course, you'll hear trainer talk and the call-in show and the weekend stakes preview next week. If you missed any portion of this show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out a podcast. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts as well. Follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and Instagram. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, with me here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. For Chauncey handling all of our social media, Happy New Year, everybody. Be safe out there on New Year's Eve. And as always, let's do this. Go Steelers, go Houston Texans.